again. You'll love it.
Hold on. Do it again. Wrong sound. Hold on.
It's such a
one more time. One more time.
I officially call this meeting of the Public Service Commission to order.
Yes. Yes.
Just look back home.
If you behave well when my term is over, I will bequeath you this.
Bequeath.
Looking forward to that already.
So I think that counts as an official wrap, but just in case it doesn't, we'll do it the official way. All right. Good morning, everyone. My name is Julie Fedorchek. I'm chairman of the Public Service Commission. And we're gathered here today, January 7th, at about 10:02 a.m. for the regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission on the 12th floor of the Capitol. In terms of some opening comments, I thought I'd start with a subject near and dear to my heart. UND hockey. Just kidding. Of course, I'll allow the NDSU stage and comments about the trip to Frisco, the fourth trip to Frisco, to leave that to Commissioner Kalk. But I just wanted to make a couple comments since we just kicked off. We had a pretty exciting day yesterday with the governor's State of the State address, very optimistic State of the State address. And our oath of office that we completed, Commissioner Kalk and I, and it's just always a humbling experience to do that and to be reminded again that you're, pledging to represent and with all honor and respect and integrity the people of the state, and I'm honored to be here and to do that. And then just watching the whole process and the legislators coming back and all those folks who are, there's 140 people here who are, coming together to pass policy and budgets to serve the citizens of the state. And it's really important work, and it's something that legislators often get razzed about, and people on the sidelines kind of like to criticize legislators and question their decisions and all of that. But I am always amazed by these folks. They're leaving their families behind. They have jobs. They have kids. They have spouses. And it's a big sacrifice for the whole family of legislators. So I encourage us at the PSC to honor them and to respect them and to appreciate them and really work well with them through this process to do the best for the Public Service Commission and our work and the citizens that we are serving. So it's great to have them back, and I'm really looking forward to a positive legislative session. And also, the governor was talking a lot in his State of the State about the state of North Dakota, and I think it reflects well on the work of the legislature that we are the strongest economy in the nation, and he cited a whole bunch of Gallup poll survey results that show that the people of the state recognize that and appreciate what's going on here and support it, and that is in no small measure due to the good work of these citizen legislators who come here and pass budget and policy just 80 days every 2 years. It's really kind of a marvel, the system that we have in North Dakota, and I can say without a doubt, I think it is the best legislative system in the country and helps North Dakota be the greatest state in the most amazing country in the world. So really honored to be part of that process and looking forward to the next couple of months. So with that, I'll pass it over to Commissioner Christman, see if he has any opening comments.
Well, thank you for saying those nice things about the legislature. You know how strongly I feel about the good work that they do. Is it not coming through? It's on. Okay. I'm just thrilled to have them here, and it was fun getting down there and hearing the State of the State address yesterday. You covered that pretty well. I'll just add to it, though, that today we have the State of the Judiciary address from Chief Justice Van de Waal, and that's always interesting and important. And today it's a little extra special because right afterwards he'll be honored with the Rough Rider Award, and that is a rarely given out award, and he is certainly well deserving of it. Lastly, I want to commend you on taking over as chairman. We've already had a couple of smaller meetings. This is our first regular meeting of the commission since you took over as chairman. I look forward to working with you in that regard for the next couple years. And I also want to thank Commissioner Kalk. 2 years ago when myself and Commissioner Fedorchuk came on brand new. That I don't know if that's ever happened since 1940, probably, when there were two commissioners brand new at once. And I've been asked about it a couple times, how that all went. And I've often expressed this to others, but maybe not to Commissioner Kalk. But I felt lucky that we had you at the reins for these 2 years. I think one thing that showed through was that you had been here long enough to know what we needed to do, but not so long that you couldn't remember how hard it was to get started. And so in that regard, I think you really provided good leadership for us. But also your background in the Marine Corps and in teaching and such, I think you've been a really strong leader, and I want to express my appreciation to you for your time as chairman.
My turn. Thank you, ma'am. Just a couple thoughts. The first, thank Randy and Julie for the comments. I think we've got a really good commission here. I thought that 2 years ago, and I really, after 2 years working the three of us, I really believe that because it's such a strong, diverse background. It really lets us look at the issues from a lot of different angles, from whether it's legislative, whether it's the executive branch, whether it's federal government background, whether it's other things. So I look forward to the next 2 years. And they say the world's a circle. 6 years ago and 6 days, I was in this chair, and I'm back again. So thank everyone for coming out. Special thanks to the staff today, too, because there was a lot of changes in our agenda from the portfolios changing over. So just thank everyone for putting it all together.
Thank you. And that reminds me, I wanted to welcome our newest members of the staff, Casey. Glad to have you on board and as an attorney here, and we'll put you to good work immediately working in the legislative session, and you're going to be a real asset. Casey's a fine, smart, very, 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 very smart woman. I know this because she graduated from UND. Okay. So I think that concludes our opening comments. And we have a number of items on the consent agenda. I want to move passage of the consent items this morning.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I do just want to point out one of the items, actually three of the items on the consent agenda, and that is our rulemaking package. We've gone through a rulemaking series this fall. Some of them are sort of procedural, and one group of them is just bringing us up to speed with PHMSA regulations on gas pipeline safety. Others are practice and procedures through the commission. And then there's some fairly substantial rulemaking changes on licensing and bonding for grain elevators, and we've gone through the public hearing process on that, and now we're moving that package forward today, I hope, to the next step of the process, and hopefully ultimately will be approved and implemented. And I want to thank Commissioner Crispin for his leadership on that and some of the good changes that were recommended by the audit, and now we're implementing those, and I think it's a step in the right direction.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, moving into the regular agenda to get used to going first. My first item on the agenda, and one of the items that belongs to me has been moved over to Brian because we had some portfolio holder changes. So JF2 will move to BK5 and will be handled by Brian during his group of items. So JF1 is Highland Crude. I move the commission deem complete the applications of Highland Crude LLC for a waiver of procedures and time schedules and to amend first amended certificate of corridor compatibility number 157 and first amended route permit number 169. I further move the commission issue a notice of filings and notice opportunity for hearing in Highland Crude LLC, Crude Oil Pipeline, McKenzie Williams, Montreal siting application case number PU-13-136.
Second.
So this is a project that has we've been seeing kind of monthly since this fall. This project is for a 197-mile pipeline. It came to us in there's six segments. They came to us for an application to approve the entire pipeline as one continuous route, 197 miles. They were not originally able to obtain all the waivers. Some of the line comes within 500 feet of rural residences, which requires a waiver. They were not able to attain all those waivers originally. So we issued them a permit conditioned on them receiving those waivers. Then in November, they came back, asked us to revise the permit and operate the segments of the pipeline that didn't have any outstanding waivers. We did that in November and gave them a revised permit. Now they're coming back. This application is to request a reroute. So in one of the instances where they have not been able to receive the rate waiver, they have designed a reroute around that area that puts the line outside of the 500-foot boundary. And so now this application reflects that and includes all of the various studies, et cetera, for that reroute. So today we're just issuing a notice of opportunity for a hearing, and we will see if anybody requests a hearing. And I'm also going to, on admin, suggest that we schedule a work session so we can discuss this and discuss the procedure moving forward on this issue while the notice of opportunity runs. So that kind of brings us up to speed on that issue.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, so skipping JF2 and moving to JF3, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Tesoro High Plains Pipeline Company, LLC, Bakken Area Storage Hub, Williams County, citing application case number PU-14-730.
Second.
Tesoro owns a 233 miles of gathering and transmission pipelines system. It starts in eastern Montana, runs through western North Dakota, and kind of concludes in Mandan. This project before us upgrades their Bakken Air Storage Hub, which is in Williams County. It's about 7 miles south of Tioga, and it's a storage tank facilities. Basically, they're adding additional tanks, one additional 130,000 barrel tank and two additional 160,000 barrels tanks and the associated piping. It's a $31.5 million project, and it's expanded on 43 acres, and it would increase their total storage capacity on that site to around or more than 800,000 barrels per day. They'll be constructing the necessary containment dikes and the pumps, et cetera, currently, prior to this expansion, they have three 120,000 barrel per day or barrel tanks there, that facility. In their application, they contacted all of the relevant agencies: U.S. Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Game and Fish, Parks and Rec, the State Historic Preservation Office, North Dakota Department of Health. Heard back from those agencies. SHPO has concurred that no significant sites will be impacted. There were no historical resource sites identified on this project location. So we had a notice for opportunity for hearing that we issued. No requests for hearing were received upon the deadline, which was December 12th. So today we are issuing, this would issue the order to Tesoro to allow construction of these additional tanks at the storage facility. It really helps them maximize their pipeline system in North Dakota and allows them to operate 100,000 barrels per day through their pipeline system with the addition of this storage on site.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my items in my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
Thank you. RC1, I move the commission close out contract number AM-698-14 with Northeast Technical Services Incorporated for completion of work on the 2014 Scranton-Bowman Phase 2 AML project.
Second.
On May 28th of 2014, the commission entered into this contract with Northeast Technical Services of Virginia, Minnesota. The primary project work involved drilling and the injection of pressurized grout into abandoned underground mine workings near Scranton, We also had a separate contract for the collection and lab testing of grout samples and other services. The original contract with Northeast Technical Services was in the amount of $32,500. All work under the contract was completed for a cost of $31,192. Joan Briner supervises project, and the work was completed to her satisfaction. The contractor also certified that all employees, subcontractors, and suppliers used for fulfilling terms of the contract have been paid. The final invoice was submitted, and it has been paid. The ML division recommends the contract be closed.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the commission close out contract number AM-696-14 with GeoServe Incorporated for completion of work on the 2014 Beulah Zap Phase 15 AML project.
Second.
On June 11th of this year, the commission entered into this contract with GeoServe Incorporated of Bismarck. The primary project work involved drilling and the injection of pressurized grout into abandoned underground mine workings north of Beulah, and that's the big distinction between this one and the previous one down at Scranton. We also had a separate contract for the collection and lab testing of grout samples and other services. The original contract with GeoServe was in the amount of $32,000. All the work under this contract was completed for a total cost of $29,268.75. Joan Briner again supervised this project as well as the previous one, and the work was completed to her satisfaction. The contractor also certified that all employees, subcontractors, and suppliers used for fulfilling terms of the contract have been paid. Final invoice was submitted, and that's been paid, and so the ML division recommends that this contract also be closed.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just thank Jim and his crowd upstairs, and especially Joan for her work on this. She does this. She's been with us now a couple, 3 years, and really getting her feet underneath her very well. And both these projects came in under budget, and I'm sure she was very close keeping an eye on all this stuff. So pass that along, Jim Wyatt.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Short portfolio for me. That concludes everything here.
All right. Commissioner Kolk.
You will take note that the number of motions under my portfolio has grown immensely in the last week or so. I wonder how that's worked out.
Thank you for taking over that portfolio.
All right.
It is a very fun portfolio. You get to work with great people.
Of course. All right. On that note, item BK1. I move the commission adopt the supplemental order in Sunflower Wind Project LLC Wind Energy Conversion Facility Stark and Morton Siting Application, case number PU14-105.
Second.
A little background on this case. In June of 2014, the commission issued a certificate of site compatibility for Sunflower Wind to construct a wind farm of 110 megawatts. And in that plan, we had two different turbines that were approved. And basically what ended up happening is the company, once they got farther down the road, decided on a third turbine, but they didn't have approval to build with that third turbine. So in October of this year, they filed an application for the third turbine type. Basically in December, the commission discussed the matter with commission staff, and we talked about having an informal on this instead of actually going back out and having a hearing. I think the difference was that we'd recently just approved the project for the two different variant wind turbines. And so for the third one, it was all fresh in our mind. They were able to give us all the information we needed in informal. So we were able to have this without having another hearing. We actually are going back down to Ashley whenever the weather permits to have a hearing for something very similar to this. But in this particular case, what they've asked for this time is that a Vestas V100 turbine be used, 2.0 megawatts, hub height of approximately 80 meters, rotor diameter of 100 meters, total project cost is still around $180 million. It'll still be not to exceed 110 megawatts. The company provided in the informal the acoustic and shadow flicker studies that were all within our parameters. They'll need final SHPO concurrence before they start construction, but they've completed the work on this. And so really everything is in order on this order. The only thing is the commission had a a work session on just how to deal with the changing nature of wind farm siting and the continual mix of turbines. And so we didn't come to any hard and fast conclusions, but we did offer up to companies when they come in for our hearings that if there's going to be an array of turbines, they should talk about the effect of those different turbines so we can consider that in the initial hearing and not go back every time they come back with the turbine change, because the ability and cost of turbines continues to fluctuate and goes down quite a bit. So that's all good. But it's very challenging for the commission when you have a hearing on Model X and they come back and they want to build Model Y, and we haven't considered that. So this order is certainly appropriate. But just a larger message out there to the wind farm developers, the more information they can give us, the better. And we are also even talking about maybe even someday having wind turbine corridors, where we may approve a corridor of wind projects. So we'll see where all that separate discussion goes. But in this case, appreciate Sunflower coming back in with their third turbine variant and look forward to them being able to start work when they get their final approvals in place from the SHPPO.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the commission adopt the finding of fact, conclusion of law, and order issuing a certificate of corridor compatibility number 161 and route permit number 173 and Antelope Hills Wind Project LLC 345 kV transmission line, Mercer County, siting application case number PU14-678.
Second.
Okay, background on this particular project. In August of this past year, Antelope Hills Wind Project filed an application for a certificate of corridor compatibility route permit to build a 345 kV transmission line to be located in Mercer County. In September of 2014, the commission deemed the application complete and set forth a hearing to be held October 23rd in Beulah, North Dakota. The commission held that hearing. Prior to that, September 17th, Antelope Hills filed certain pre-filed exhibits. They also executed a certificate relating to orders provisioning that we require on all the transmission lines. I talked about the public hearing being held. In December of last year, Antelope Hills filed a copy of the State Historical Society SHPPO stating that the SHPPO has reviewed the cultural survey inventory and finds it acceptable, so they have SHPPO concurrence. A little more background on this line. It's approximately 9.5 miles of line. 3 miles of the transmission line will share an existing transmission corridor operated by Rough Rider Electric. The project will use two different type of frames, an H-frame or a tubular steel monopole structure. It varies a little bit depending on the route of the, depending on the location of this 10 miles, different poles, different areas for different concerns. The transmission line will be approximately 89 structures. It goes into the Antelope Valley substation. They'll meet all requirements from the National Electric Safety Codes. Go into a switch yard where they'll have many different disconnect switches, motor operations. It'll use a SCADA system. Approximate cost, $9 million. Transmission continues to run about $1 million a mile. It's funny how that always kind of works out. Antelope Hills has signed a purchase power agreement with Basin Electric to deliver this to the Antelope Hills Wind Energy through the Antelope Valley Station switch yard. So kind of long and short of it is it's just a 10-mile line to interconnect one of their potential wind projects to the existing substation. It's a very, very tight area. And so during the hearing, most of our questions centered around their route selection. And this was the shortest, most direct route from A to B. But we did have some questions about why they didn't use other routes. And they provided, I think, a lot of information on that. And at the end of the day, it's a very good project. It's a needed project. It's a small line. But I'm anxious that we can get this approved and they can get going on this, because you can build all the energy generation you want around the state, but if you don't have the transmission tying it all together, it doesn't do you much good. So I think everything appears to be in order, and I look forward to a positive vote.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. Moving on. I move the commission adopt the consent order in the Public Service Commission Damage Prevention Enforcement Action concerning Knife River Corporation, case number PU14-714.
Second.
A little background. Knife River Corporation is a registered business with this office located in Williston, North Dakota. MDU is a registered North Dakota corporation with offices located in Williston, North Dakota. The commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from MDU The complaint alleges a violation by Knife River of the one called Notice Evacuation System. And yes, Knife River and MDU are kind of the same corporation, but they are different parts of it. So our crack staff made sure that that's exactly what they wanted to happen, but the law is the law. And so the complaint was filed. Our staff investigated it, and based on the investigation, on August 28th, Knife River personnel began an excavation as defined under North Dakota Century Code while performing repairs to water shutoffs in Harvest Hill edition of Williston, North Dakota. Knife River did not have a valid one-call ticket for this evacuation. Based on the investigation, staff concluded that a 12,470-volt electric distribution cable was damaged during this excavation, and the amount of the damage was approximately $3,000. The operator has been reimbursed for damages. 150 customers lost services for approximately 1.5 hours. Residential customers, there was no businesses or hospitals involved. Based on the investigation, staff concluded there was no agreement between Knife River and MDU. It was not being made under emergency, and Knife River violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to provide an excavation notice at least 48 hours before beginning its excavation. In this consent order, Knife River agrees to pay a fine of $2,000 to the North Dakota Public Service Commission within 10 days of this order. And of course, the money goes to the State General Fund, not to actually the Public Service Commission. So I appreciate the companies that have these hits of contacting our office. Staff did a good job reviewing through this, and this case was pretty straightforward. The Knife River admitted it. They agreed to the consent order. I think the fine is appropriate. We're seeing a lot of these, but I will tell you that means that people are still out there and they're not following the law, and we're going to continue to enforce them and do the research required. Just on a side note, I've not picked up any changes downstairs in the North Dakota one-call law about anything, so I think we made some changes here a couple of years ago. Both sides of the discussion are confident to let it run a little bit longer with the 21 days and the fines that we have now in our ability, the max of $25,000 per occurrence. No one's asking for an increase in that, but I believe we continue to do a good job, but still always keep an eye on things.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, as we continue our diverse set of motions today. Is diverse a word? Casey, is that a word?
No.
All right, fair enough. And you're a UND grad, so we won't question
you. She would know.
That's why I asked her. She's now the expert. All right, I digress. Item BK4. I move the commission deem the application complete and issue a notice of filing and notice of hearing in Basin Electric Power Cooperative Pioneer Generating Station Phase 3 Project, citing application case number PU14-829.
Second.
In December of 2014, Basin Electric filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility to construct and operate 12 reciprocating internal combustion engines, each generating a maximum of 9.22 megawatts of electricity. This project will be constructed adjacent to three existing 45-megawatt simple cycle combustion turbines in Williams County. The commission finds the application complete. A public hearing will be set in our scheduling portion of this, but right now we're looking at March 3rd as a date. Looks like that might work for all commissioners, but we'll confirm that. A little background on what is exactly a reciprocating internal combustion engine. Basically what it is, it's a diesel-style engine that uses natural gas when you run it. It's much more efficient, and so with them requesting to build 12 of these 9.22 megawatts, it's roughly 111 megawatts of power. So this is the first time I've seen anything like this that we'll be citing. Based on the information I picked up from our staff and their review of it, it's a good-fashioned diesel engine, very efficient, but by using gas, it's even more efficient. The availability of natural gas in this region makes this seem like a pretty good idea. We're always trying to cut down on flaring, so I look forward to the hearing and asking more questions and learning more about these type of combustion engines. So everything appears to be in order. I think I gave you the location, northwest of Williston, where we've sited those 45-megawatt plants before.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there further discussion?
I would just comment again that this is clearly a response to the need for more power in Western North Dakota. And everywhere we turn, there's new projects. Pipelines require power. gas, natural gas processing facilities require a lot of power. Oil drilling rigs require power. New housing developments. I mean, everywhere you look, there's just more demand for power. And this is an interesting project for the reasons you already outlined, Commissioner Culkin. And then we've got, you know, several wind projects here that we've got underway. So just seeing the real need for more power generation in Western North Dakota. And I know that all of us are waiting for some new baseload power projects to come our way and are hoping that this new year will bring some of those to fruition, a good new big baseload project. But in the meantime, these peaking plants provide a real important role for adding additional power when demand requires it, which is pretty much constant in Western North Dakota now. And they also help supplement some of the renewable resources that we're seeing on the grid in large numbers now in North Dakota with the wind. So looking forward to this hearing and learning more about this approach and what else the companies are looking at for the future.
Is there any further discussion?
I did forget to add one thing. When I looked at the map again, of course, the Pioneer Generating Station is northwest of Williston, but it's literally right across County Road 5 from the One Oak Processing Gas Plant. So I suspect they'll figure out something to get the gas from one side of the road to the other. So it's defining more uses for the natural gas, and this appears to be a really prime location for that.
I just want to add to Commissioner Fedorchak's comments about that this is not baseload and really emphasize that. Been a lot of talk in the last couple of years about need for more power. Yes, this kind of a project helps to satisfy the need that's created when we rely on wind power to get that power there, because we know there's times when backup is needed. It also satisfies the need for emergency situations when a real baseload provider might be down for a short time or just extraordinary high volume demand moments. Because these can come on and offline very quickly. But the fact of the matter is, as consumers, we don't want these kinds of things running often. We want them there for emergency purposes, but not running frequently, or we're going to be facing some pretty stiff bills. So it shouldn't be believed that this is generally satisfying the need for power. You were very correct in pointing out we still need baseload power in the state.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. And finally, for me, item BK5, I move the commission adopt the order in Montana-Dakota Utility Company's electric generation rider rates, case number PU14-109.
Second.
Okay, a little background in this case. I'll go way back, I guess. The commission, over the last few years, has given out approved many advanced determination and prudences on many projects, and previous commission approved an ADP on the Heskett plant. Roughly at that time, it was roughly $76 million, and over the period of time of what the initial costs were, the company MDU pulled out a pipeline, which originally was part of that Heskett plant, and that's been separated. So that was a $20 million project that's going to go on their pipeline costs. So the cost of the current Heskett plant is roughly $56 million, and so that's been going through. The commission has issued an ADP on it. In February of this last year, MDU filed to implement a generation resource cost recovery rider tariff to pay for the cost of this plant. And so we knew the general cost of the plant. The company submitted the rider. And basically the way that the initial rider was filed, it said that they would file the rider but not request reimbursement as long as they could cover it with their own internal ability. They did not need the additional revenue to meet the cost of the plant. And so we approved that back in August, saying, yes, the rider is approved, but we're not going to be collecting any revenue until the time is required. In November of this year, MD filed a request to implement the rate adjustments necessary to recover the additional cost to be effective January of 2015. So basically, as they went through their data collection at the end of 2014, they looked at it and said, we're going to need to recover the cost of this plant starting in 2015. Quite frankly, I was thinking perhaps we should get into a rate case, because when you go through these riders, wasn't initially sold on riders as being the best way because I like things to get into base rates as soon as possible. But as we found out with wind costs, they tend to fluctuate every year, so it's hard to put them into base rates. And this particular plant at Heskett, we did have an informal on this case. And during the informal, I was convinced by the company that they've done a very good job of laying out the cost of what it's going to be. So I didn't think, in my opinion, a rate case is required. And this is the best way, I think, to track something like this coming online early is what your costs are going to be. So that's why I settled into where I think a rider is appropriate for this, then this will get reviewed. And at some point in time when MDU does file their next rate case, that it'll get rolled into base rates. Potentially we've got a better layout of what these costs are going to be. What's the word now, Casey? In perpetuity? Is that the word? Forever? So the what this comes down to is that what this will do is it'll authorize MDU to collect revenues to cover the cost, and the average cost to the consumer, if the average consumer is 894 kilowatts, which is actually an increase from what our old average consumer used to be, it's roughly $2.57. MDU also has a sharing agreement that if they earn more than 10.75 return on equity, 50% of that will go back to the customer. And I'm looking at the total revenue collected, and I'm not seeing that here. I suppose Mike's not in here.
Jerry was staff on this.
What's the total revenue on this? And I don't see it in the order, and I forgot to ask it.
It's $5.2 million is the agreed upon revenue amount.
There we go. So the thank you, Julie. So the $5.2 million is broken out, and to break that down, the average customer, 2.57 for the average residential, and there's different rates. Small generation has a different rate, 0.223 cents, and then large generation. So this is certainly an increase to MDU customers, and it goes back to Commissioner Crispin's comments about, you know, we want these things to be available, but they do cost money. This is the laying out of something that MDU is needed to keep their reliability and their voltage in the area, but there's a cost to it. And so the commission has been tracking this for many years, and now it's time that MDU is allowed to recover those costs. I think it's a very good project. I think it's a good setup all the way around. But it does highlight that gas generation, wind generation are just part of the equation. We need to get some good wholesale base load out there. But I do think this is MDU did a very good job of deferring these costs as long as they could, and they came back with a very good explanation as to why the costs were required at this point in time. And by using this rider, it'll allow the commission to track these costs very closely every year. And I believe everything appears to be in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I would just add a couple comments since this was a case that kind of I started with and now has been passed along to Commissioner Kalk. But we asked a lot of questions about the company's ability to absorb the cost of this plant within their growing revenues, because they do have growing revenues and growing customer base. And they, outlined a 27% increase in their rate base, so their plant additions, $119 million worth of plant additions for the 2015 year. And plant additions are just investments in the system, and those benefit customers. And they those, along with a 17% increase in their operations O&M, non-fuel O&M, couldn't be offset with the 8% increase in revenue, so they felt that they needed the additional revenues to help pay for this facility, have customers help pay for it. Customers did enjoy 5 months of use of this facility. It came online in October, and customers enjoyed 5 months without a rate increase, 5 months of benefit without a rate increase. And so I think that's one positive. And the other really positive piece for customers on this agreement, I believe, is the revenue sharing. If the company ends up collecting more revenues than allowed in the 2015 year, than meeting their ROE, then they will return 50% of those to customers. So there is a cap, if you will, or a mechanism in place to protect the customers in the case of over collection of revenues by MDU. And so those two facts in mind, I am going to support this rate increase.
Is there any further discussion?
Maybe just one more opining a bit. The we've got all this development in this state, whether it's transmission lines or power lines, and a lot of it is needed for new growth. But I will tell you, quite frankly, a lot of our systems out there are old. Transmission lines were built in the 70s and 80s, so they would need to be replaced now anyway. Some of our other existing generation is old, so it would need to be replaced. So we are benefiting from this surge of growth in the state because it's allowing us to replace and improve our infrastructure where this would be required. Even if we didn't have the Bakken going on, we'd be required to replace some of the transmission lines, maybe not to the extent now. But so there's many different positive sides to the growth right now, and I just wanted to throw that out there as well.
And more on that, this is also a new kind of, you know, state-of-the-art natural gas combustion cycle facility. So it's really an upgrade to MDU's generation portfolio, and it's going to serve customers well for many, many years.
And uses natural gas to
natural
stop the flaring.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Excellent. Well, keeping with Commissioner Kalk's order of things for the meetings, I
call it the American way.
The American way. I like America. All right. So just to preview some of the upcoming items on our calendar, we have a few bills up this end of this week that we're watching and we'll be weighing in the legislature. And then next week we have a formal hearing in Wofford City on an NGL pipeline, and that will take place on Tuesday the 13th at 9 a.m. at Teddy's Residential Suites in Wofford. So the public is invited and encouraged to attend that hearing. On Wednesday we'll give our budget presentation to the Senate Appropriations Committee at 3 o'clock on Wednesday. So we'll outline to them our budget priorities and ask for their support. And then, let's see, looking ahead, there's some telco meeting on the week of the 20th and another regularly scheduled commission meeting and then another formal hearing, the rescheduled hearing down in Ashley for the Maricourt Wind Power Project that we had to reschedule from a weather delay in December. And so that kind of highlights things. Early February, we have a big damage enforcement, a whole day of hearings on a damage enforcement claim on February 3rd. And so that'll be an interesting day, no doubt. So with that, do we have any questions from the media gallery?
Yes. All one of us. On BK4, do you have a cost on that?
BK4, sure we do.
As the Pioneer Phase 3?
I do not, Dave.
Oh, okay.
Victor, can you scare something up for us?
Yeah. 161.2. Pardon? 161.2.
161,000? Million. So we don't even have to say million anymore. We just know it's $1 million.
Yeah. So this is a different type of technology. I'm kind of curious, did Basin tell you why they went with this technology?
You know, they didn't as far as I saw, but I will ask, I think some of the questions we might have come out in the hearing, I'll ask Victor a little bit. But it is curious that they've gone through the 45-megawatt design before. So I don't know if it's just that they're more efficient, if this was something in their inventory. And since it's Basin, you know, we won't go back to a rate case ever on this. But Victor, did you deem anything out of that in your review of the application?
No, there wasn't a good explanation that I found. At the site already, they have combustion turbines. And another site, they're planning to add more combustion turbines. It's just a decision they made on this one. I'm not sure why yet, okay. But we definitely intend to ask the questions.
I was just kind of curious, because when you start talking about diesel engines, now you're talking a little different technology.
Well, absolutely. It's the diesel, but it uses the gas and burns it more efficiently. And so I don't know if this is just speculation, but it may come down to the air quality permits might be different mixes. It may be the way they count some of those. I guess I don't know, Dave.
And although I wouldn't think it would be the reason for a switch in technology, I do think these are even faster to come online than those.
And more incremental. You can bring on, you know, on just about 10 megawatts at a time based on demand. So that might be a nice
instead
benefit
of 45,
as well.
Yeah.
Sure. There was some discussion on that in their application. The time schedule for getting these approved and the variation in loads.
Okay. You said the total was 115, was that right? Or
megawatts?
Yeah.
111 megawatts.
111, okay.
12 12 of the combustion engines, geez, I can't talk today, 9.22 megawatts per. So that goes back to what my colleagues were saying. I guess you could fire them up in 10 megawatt increments.
And then on BK5, does that that goes in effect January 2015?
It should go in effect for the customers the next billing cycle. So it'll be effective today. I've got Tammy sitting over here. When do you think customers will actually see it in their bills? As the bills cycle through.
Yeah, okay. All right. Gee, I'm picking on you again today.
Okay.
BK3 sounds like a almost sibling rivalry, doesn't it?
When I talked with our staff, I said, let me get this straight, that we've got Knife River and MDU going back and forth, you think, but that's the law. So, yeah, it was very interesting, but I think it was pretty clean once our staff got it that they paid right away and the damages were there, but I think they're probably sending a message back and forth.
Okay, and clarification on JF3. You said that it's going to be 800,000 per day, 800,000 barrels per day?
No, that's their total storage capacity.
Total storage capacity.
Yep, it's 800,000 barrels versus 3 times 120 is 360,000 barrels per day currently. So they're increasing the storage capacity at that site.
And they're doing this again, just to clarify, the reason they're doing that, they're expanding as much as they are.
They just want to have more on-site storage because of the volumes of crude in that area, so they can store more and take on more and then work it through their system as they have the capacity to do so.
Okay. The way I understood it is it gives them some flexibility that by having that storage, they can change levels of storage. It can allow them to change the throughput, make it a safer system.
Oh, okay. So how was your first commission meeting as a chairman?
Great. It was laid out very well by Commissioner Culk previously, so I had a good mentor to follow, and with the help of the whammer and getting things off to a good site. I am going to keep this whammer here just in case these two get out of order because they can get kind of squirrely. And so if you ever see me just kind of reach into one side or the other, now I have a tool.
I do have one other question on a serious subject, and that's because of the Larimore accident, because it was a it did not have the crossing arms. If I remember correctly, there was some discussion with the railroads about certain unmarked crossings or unimproved crossings. Have you been contacted by anybody, or is this something that the Public Service Commission might have to weigh in on?
Not on this accident, and we did re-examine the specific jurisdiction in this area because of that horrible accident. It's so tragic. I hate to think about it and the parents and families involved in that. It's really, really sad. But we did look at our jurisdiction to see, what role we play, just to refresh our memories. And it really, the crossings on roads and railroads is really DOT. It's up to DOT to do the marking and determine, the safety arms, et cetera. If there's a discrepancy and a disagreement, they can come to us, and Alana, you correct me if I'm wrong, but they can come to us and we can weigh in, but there's a formal filing of a complaint or something of that nature that happens to trigger our involvement in that process.
Dave, if I could just expound upon that, not so much in that case, but the commission has had hearings about, private crossings on blowing the whistle, and it really came down to those kind of issues where you'd have the railroad that didn't want to blow their whistle, and then we would make a determination of whether we'd let them do that. And the crossings, it becomes, when we get into those hearings, it becomes a very interesting, the risk balancing. And so it'll be interesting as this investigation, I'm sure the Highway Patrol is doing, comes out, they'll have what they recommend happens. There perhaps will be things that we could all learn about this. And we understand this wasn't the first time that an accident took place up there. There was one in 2009, the same rail crossing. So it'll be very interesting as we see the lessons learned on this. I know the Federal Railroad Association was up there today, so there'll be a lot of folks reviewing this to see what can be learned.
Anything else? All right. Thank you, Dave. We will take a brief recess, maybe get back, come back and order at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock for the admin portion.
Do you mind, Commissioner, if I got to speak at 11:30. Do you mind if we just roll?
Sure. You okay with that, Randy?
Yep.
All right. Then we'll sign everything
afterwards. The co-op banquet coming up. Can't miss that.
Yeah. Exactly. Are you speaking? Oh, I guess I can't miss it either then. All right. Well, let's just roll into the admin agenda here.